everything out closer to the people.
We got to stop it, brother. Let's get together and unify.
Trouble, trouble, trouble.
Radio Basics.
And there's always a message involved.
Everybody, good evening. This is Radio Basics.
Yeah, welcome to Radio Basics. I'm Corey.
I'm Alex.
What's up? Steve's here too, taking tonight.
The three of us are going to be holding it down tonight on Radio Basics, CHRY 105.5 FM. We got a good show planned. We're going to be talking to some community activists who have been advancing the Tamil struggle here in Toronto. I'm sure all of you have noticed. They've been at it for a while. And Alex, what are you bringing us from Washington?
From Washington, we're going to have a report back from a couple of the delegates who went down to the African Liberation Day conference that was being held by the African People's Socialist Party in D.C. Mm-hmm. So we'll be talking to Chris and Nicole about their experiences there this weekend.
And you're going to throw in, aren't you? You went
were there
down
too.
There.
Yeah, I was there too.
Nice.
But, we'll talk about that more later on. And then to end up, we're going to talk a little bit about the artist collective that Basics is, initiating.
So artists out there, be looking forward to that. We hope you're listening, and we hope that you are going to consider joining the Basics Artist Collective. We need some talented, committed artists with a revolutionary perspective to help us get this thing off the ground. So more about that later. First, we're going to take you to a musical track. Alex, what are we going to check out?
A song we're going to hear now is called Self Defense. It's by Lal, a Toronto-based artist. And I think it's a pretty good introduction to, the Tamil struggle, the interview that we're going to be having with, the movement.
So let's get into it.
Yes, thank you, Steve.
This is Lal, Self Defense.
And you can try to push me around, try to push me around, try to push me around. And you can try to take me down, down. And you can try to sell me out. And I
that was Lal, Self-Defense. And as Alex said, that's a great intro to the interview we're doing right now with Pragash. Are you with us, Pragash?
Yep, I'm on the line.
Hi, thanks for being with us tonight. For our listeners, Pragash is a Tamil community activist who's agreed to join us here and answer some of our questions. So we're going to get started. Are you ready to go?
We're ready, right on.
All right. So first question, if you could just provide a bit of background to our listeners about what's happening in Sri Lanka right now, including a brief historical synopsis of the conflict.
Basically, the current situation is that the armed resistance put up by the Tamils in Sri Lanka has been sort of crushed because of several imperialist agendas of like India, China, the United States, Europe, Iran, and it was crushed. It was mainly being headed by the Tamil Tigers of the Liberation Tigers of Tamilism, and because they've been crushed militarily, I've been forced to go underground at this moment. Most of the Tamil civilians that had supported them in the areas that were under their control, basically all the Tamil homeland, about 300,000 of those civilians have been sort of herded into these concentration camps, where even NGOs in the United Nations aren't being allowed in. It's a pretty desperate situation. The conflict has a pretty long history. So, sort of give you a simple synopsis. It's been 60 years running. The sort of armed struggle has occurred in the last 25 to 30 years. Before that, there was a peaceful Gandhian movement headed up by parliamentarian to secure the sort of democratic and basic fundamental rights of the Tamil minority in the Sri Lankan state. The Sri Lankan state is a little island just south of the Indian Ocean. And after the failure of those parliamentarians, they ran on an electoral platform calling for the secession of the natural Tamil homeland from the Sri Lankan state, and they won with an overwhelming majority, basically. Unfortunately, at this point, the Sri Lankan state, to shut down that democratic movement, basically made it legal to speak of secession in any form, even peacefully. So therefore, these parliamentarians, basically, in their final resolution as a party, put forward a call that if they couldn't succeed politically and peacefully, that the right of the Tamil people to secede, their democratic rights to self-determination, have to be defended by an armed resistance movement, primarily led by the youth. And that's what pretty much occurred. Several dozen armed groups formed, armed resistance groups formed, to try to defend the Tamil areas from oppression and occupation. And over time, the group that was most successful, most efficient, was the Tamil Tigers, the Liberation Tigers of Tamilism, shortened to LTTE. And right now, they've been crushed and militarily from the aid of several imperial powers, such as India, like I said. We're talking in the last 6 months, even the United Nations, and this is the United Nations that's pretty much powerless on the island, has come out and said it was a bloodbath. There's calls for war crimes investigations against the Sri Lankan state for what they did to the civilians. We're talking they starved the civilians that supported the Tamils, the Tamil Tigers. They used cluster ammunition in densely packed civilian areas. The Sri Lankan state declared a no-fire zone to basically, and herded all these civilians into this no-fire zone, and then basically bombarded it with artillery. And they denied it until about last month, and even then the United Nations, pretty much the whole world was accepting that. And finally, satellite photos were leaked by the United Nations showing artillery craters in the no-fire zone.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So it just sort of gives you an idea of just how, like, really bloody this the whole affair is. And there's been proof of chemical weapons being used against civilians and the Tamil Tigers by the Sri Lankan state. Bombardment of the no-fire zone and refugee camps. It was a pretty horrible situation.
So, Pragash, why do countries like the United States and India and Iran, some of the others that you mentioned, have an interest in continuing to support what seems like pretty genocidal actions by the Sinhalese Sri Lankan state against the Tamil people? Like, what's in it for those states?
It's pretty, I mean, like, the whole geopolitical situation is pretty complex, but unfortunately, a lot of your Middle East listeners will understand this as well, though. A lot of it does have to do with oil. If you look at Sri Lanka, it sits in a very strategic position in the Indian Ocean. A lot of like oil tankers actually go by there. There's a very important port. The most important natural harbor in the Indian Ocean is in Sri Lanka, in the Tamil homeland. It's called Trincomalee. Like we're talking, the United States has like an offer to develop it as a military base. The Americans want it as a military base. The Indians want to keep out as many people from entering there as well. The Indian state wants control of it. Obviously, Pakistan and China also want that as an entrance into the Indian Ocean. Mm-hmm. And it's quite complex. That's one of the others. And the simple idea is that if another one is that another sort of aspect of it is the Tamil Tigers, as an armed resistance group trying to represent the, you know, the self-determination of the Tamil people on the island, they represent a very distinct challenge to the sort of the imperial order of the current sort of global states.
Mm-hmm.
They were infamous for being the most efficient non-state military organization in the world. It was the war on terror ideology was used against them, specifically dismantle what they had built. We're talking, they're the only non-state party to ever create a naval force, to create a air force, a tiny air force they were using effectively. We're talking, they had armored divisions, they had anti-armor divisions, they had regular infantry, and they even had regular militia units as well, right?
Mm-hmm. And I guess we know that countries like India, Iran, have their own anti-imperialist armed movements in their countries to deal with, you know. You have the Kurdish struggle that borders
exactly
with Iran. Another, you have the Naxalite struggle in India, which has liberated much of the country. Pragash, I wanted to ask you a question about Canada's role in particular, but we have to go to a commercial. We're going to be right back. Please stay with us.
Not a problem.
CHRY 105.5, this is Radio Basics. We'll be back.
You're listening to CHRY 105.5 FM, your community radio.
CHRY 105.5, this is Steve. I'm here with Corey. This is Radio Basics. Alex as well is off to the side. And we're talking to Pragash from the Tamil community here in Toronto. He's been part of the large-scale mobilizations against the genocidal war against the Tamils in Sri Lanka. We've been speaking to him for the last 10 minutes. Pragash, are you still there?
Yes, here.
So, Pragash, I wanted to ask, you mentioned all the imperialist interest in the conflict in Sri Lanka right now. And in particular, I wanted to ask you, we had a few more questions before we wrap up the interview, but in particular, I just wanted to ask, what was Canada's role hasn't been completely neutral, right? I understand that they placed the Tigers on the terrorist list a couple years back, and they even gave aid in the last couple months. The Bev Oda, a member of parliament, went to Sri Lanka and gave aid to the Sri Lankan government to the tune of $3 million. So how do you see that Canada's role in all this?
Canada definitely plays an interesting role. I mean, it's part lackey to the American imperialist sort of ideals. They reinforce what are like basically American ideals, and at the same time they sort of play a lot of it does have to do with the current sort of administration that's in parliament. The Harper government has sort of like they're basically very complicit in a lot of things that the Tamil community is like is amazed with. We've basically been marginalized by the Harper government. In a sense that, as Canadians, we have asked for nothing more than a humanitarian sort of diplomatic intervention against Sri Lanka on ideals of, like, Canadian ideals. And as in many other places, the current administration has completely failed that. They completely failed basic Canadian ideals in the sense that they're basically giving money to a state that is under investigation for war crimes and genocide. Mm-hmm. It's an amazing thing, the fact that the Harper government banned the Tamil Tigers as a terrorist organization for risking civilian lives, and then more or less ignored the death of 30,000 civilians by a state, the Sri Lankan state. And this seems to be a running theme in this administration. It's horrendous. And as Canadians, as the Tamil community and as a Canadian community, we're absolutely shocked by this. The fact that we work so hard to even raise the issue with our government, our national leader, like Stephen Harper, and he hasn't even come out and said anything, makes them very, like, makes Canada very complicit in what's happening in Sri Lanka. The largest Tamil community outside of South Asia exists mm-hmm. here in Toronto alone. We've sort of shown that with our mass mobilization, peaceful mobilization, and we've been totally ignored by the Harper government. We've just been called terrorists.
So, Prakash, what are the demands of the Tamil community here in Toronto?
Well, right now, we want to make sure that no money is going to fund the Sri Lankan state. We want to also make sure that the people in the north and east, and the natural Tamil homeland, that have been horrendously affected by this war, are supported by respectable organizations such as the International Committee of the Red Cross. But the problem is, these organizations are being kicked out by the Sri Lankan state, so allowing them to continue on with genocide. Basically, they're trying to starve the people. They're trying to starve out the population and wipe them out, giving them complete control of this area.
And so far, the Canadian government hasn't responded at all to any of the mobilizations or met any of the demands.
And one of the major sort of requests we've made is that the Canadian government diplomatically sanction the Sri Lankan state. And if it doesn't work out, then to begin the economic sanctions and to work on an international stage that we're known for, through the UN and other or international organizations, to try to bring some sort of justice to this whole situation. And as Canadians, we're requesting that. We don't feel that's very un-Canadian. We think that's a very Canadian thing to demand. And this administration has completely failed again and again, and in a lot of other places as well. And this is another place where the Harper government has completely failed Canadians. It's horrendous.
Okay, well, we were hoping to have a bit more time to get into some of the police brutality and the racism that has come out in the mainstream media while the Tamil community has been mobilizing. But unfortunately, Prakash, we just have to wrap up. So thank you so much for being here with us today. And if you could, just before we say goodbye, let people know about some websites or other news sources that they could read to supplement the perspectives that are being put out there in the mainstream media, that would be really useful for our listeners.
No, definitely. Right off the bat, that's one of the problems. The media has completely failed us, except for very few examples. And one of the best websites that anybody can go to read up on what's going on in Sri Lanka, it gives you is TamilNet. .com. That's Tamil, T-A-M-I-L, net, N-E-T, .com, all one word. They provide, when communication with our family members or else has failed in these in the conflict zone, we were depending on TamilNet. They only release verified information. They have a high reputation even within our own community. Mm-hmm. During the after the tsunami catastrophe, a lot of organizations were depending on TamilNet for the facts to come out of these zones. So TamilNet is definitely a fantastic news source on what's going on. Media, Basics Newspaper and Basics Radio has been a fantastic one as well. Otherwise, unfortunately, I have to say, the mainstream media has been completely failing its situation, informing the public of what's going on. It's kind of horrific.
Or one can say that it's actually been succeeding in building a pro-imperialist perspective towards the conflict.
I would definitely have to give that some thought. I think, at this point, I'm very close to. I'd have to accept that. Mm-hmm. They've been supporting what can be only considered an imperialist agenda throughout the world. Mm-hmm. And I've been shocked at the level of, it's incredible the racism I found in the media. There's been very few instances when our simple, very Canadian requests have been completely ignored and we've been just painted as crazy Tamils protesting for no reason or as terrorists. And this is when we're asking for humanitarian relief and diplomatic sanctions against the terrorist state.
Well, thank you for coming on here tonight, Prakash, and offering your perspectives to our listeners. And we're certainly going to continue reporting on what's going on. Feel free to be in touch with us anytime. And you heard it, listeners, TamilNet.com to supplement the mainstream media perspectives that you're getting that, as we all know, are not the most accurate and have in this situation been rife with racism. So Prakash, thanks again, and we're gonna move into a song. Alex, what
thanks
song
a lot,
are we
Prakash.
Checking out now?
Thanks.
Thank you, it's my pleasure.
Bye. So the song we're gonna hear now is called Zimbabwe by Bob Marley.
Bob.
Yeah, it's a great one. Should I just press play?
Do it. Radio Basics. Radio Basics, CHRY 105.5.
We're back. And we're going to be talking with Chris Harris and Nicole Seck about the conference that was held this weekend in Washington. I'm sorry, guys. I haven't slept yet. I didn't actually go to sleep.
That's a long bus ride, huh?
It was, yeah, it was a really long ride. And, yeah, so this weekend we were in Washington. Hi, Chris.
Hey, what's up?
Okay, we got Chris on the line.
Yeah, we got Chris. And we got Nicole here in the
Nicole's
studio.
Nicole's in the studio. What's up, Nicole? What are you saying?
So this weekend we went as a group of 10 down to Washington, D.C. To participate in African Liberation Day, which was basically a conference that was held to sort of solidify the North American Regional Committee of, you know, the African People's Socialist Party and their internationalist movement. that's working towards the liberation of African peoples and the African continent. And it was an interesting experience. I had a really good time. It was very informational. And Chris, you have a little bit more background about the APSP and INPIDM, and I was wondering if you could just like tell us a little bit about it so we can have just a basic understanding of, you know, what it's about.
The movement that we went to check out, their African Liberation Day 2009 conference, was the African People's Socialist Party, which is a revolutionary African internationalist party struggling to liberate all African people throughout the world, and most importantly to fulfill Garvey's vision, Malcolm X's vision, Kwame Nkrumah's vision of a united and free independent Africa where African people at home and abroad control the resources and the labor of Africa so that it cannot be exploited by imperialist powers throughout the world. Uhuru is the mass democratic organization that people of African descent from all walks of life can join. And again, the party is the vanguard of this revolutionary movement internationally. And that consists of the most politically aware and conscious African revolutionaries that are revolutionary nationalists, socialists, communists.
So what happened this weekend, Chris? What was and also for Nicole, what, and Alex, actually, you were all there. What did the conference this weekend look like? What was discussed? What were the panels? What was the point of the conference, the African Liberation Day?
I'll just start. In my eyes, the main objective of this conference was to invite African revolutionaries from Latin America, Central America, North America,
and the African continent itself, yeah, as well.
And, you know, to really build a case for building this African Socialist International, which is an international African revolutionary organization unifying African people on the continent and wherever you might find African people in the world.
Yeah. Actually, Nicole is part of AISO, which is the students' organization. Could you tell us a little bit about it and, like, why you joined and why you decided to come to the conference this weekend at all?
Well, AISO is a sub-division of the African People's Socialist Party. Its acronym stands for the African Internationalist Student Organization. It's a student wing of the African People's Socialist Party, and its main objective is to rally and unite all colonially oppressed and disposed African students under the revolutionary ideology of the African internationalism. This is for the purpose of liberating and unifying Africa under the leadership of the working class. I've joined because I align with many of the principles of the larger movement, and I believe that as a person of African descent, our main objective is to reclaim and
take control over the resources, right? Like, just take back power, pretty much. But why did you go down to the conference, Chris? Like, I went to the conference because you know, there are so many aspects of socialist movements, revolutionary movements. Like, there are so many different factions that are organizing all over the world, all over the city. And, you know, you really search for time for one that you can dedicate your time and your resources to, one that really aligns with you know, the principles that you align yourself with. So Basics, for example, like you and I, Chris, we do work with Basics because obviously it's a solid group of organizers. But why did you decide to go down and join up with, you know, with the APSP and what they're organizing, as opposed to going down to, I don't know, Atlanta for what the new Black Panther Party was organizing this weekend as well?
In my opinion, the New Black Panther Party is more of a conservative nationalist organization that is a development out of the Nation of Islam, and I'm more in line with the revolutionary nationalist tendency that you see represented by Uhuru and the APSP. As a revolutionary in Canada struggling with other revolutionaries in Toronto, struggling out of BADC, Black Action Defense Committee, I think it's really important that while we are concerned with struggling against the Canadian ruling class and Canadian imperialism, We cannot forget the struggle on the continent. And although we don't live in Africa, just as all nationalities have their homeland, Africa is our homeland as African people. And we didn't come to the Americas by choice. We were brought here by the gun through the slave trade and imperialism. Mm-hmm. And our struggle in Canada as African colonized people within the Canadian imperialist state is related to the struggle of Africans in the American state, as well as Africans in Latin America and Africans on the continent. Mm-hmm. And I think that the African Socialist International is a progressive initiative to unify African revolutionaries all over the world in the struggle to regain our homeland, which is Africa. Right here in North America, this is the homeland of Native Americans, and we support their struggles for self-determination. And we are, as colonized people in North America, struggling for self-determination in Canada and in America as African people, and we also have to be a part of that international movement, which is being spearheaded by the African People's Socialist Party, to build a revolutionary international
movement.
Party yeah. To regain control of the labor and resources of Africa, which yeah. is the fulfillment of Marcus Garvey's vision, as well as other Pan-African revolutionaries throughout the 20th century.
I think it's interesting that both you and Nicole have spoken about the fact that we're talking about taking back control over the resources of the continent of Africa. And one of the first speakers that I had the chance to listen to at the conference was actually talking about the corporate and capitalist exploitation of Africa, and how these foreign corporations from Canada, from the States, from Malaysia, from India, have gone to Africa, and they've monopolized control over the process of extraction and production of the resources on the continent. And that's for me, it's a very direct link to the way in which our lifestyle here in Canada is completely supported. It's completely based on the exploitation of Canada, because all the resources that have been used to produce the luxury with which we live here in Canada, at the expense of people on the African continent, has been sourced through this exploitation. But what I really wanted to get to was what can our role be? Being that we are living in Canada, what can our role really be? How can we act, being on this part of the world, to participate in this movement? Like, what can we do practically? What do you see our next steps being, given that
I think practically, again, my approach anyway is to organize with revolutionary forces within Canada against Canadian imperialism, as well as to support efforts like the African Socialist International mm-hmm. to create an international body of African revolutionaries to liberate the continent, because that is one of the unfinished goals of African revolutionary movements in the past century. And in the 21st century, the idea of the African Socialist International is to win a free and independent Africa. They have a slogan which states one nation, one people, that they see Africa as one nation. And the African People's Socialist Party didn't originate that idea. It's very much existed in the movement for generations, and the reason that they're building the African Socialist International, and they want African Canadian revolutionaries, which they don't even identify us as African Canadian, but just they say African revolutionaries in North America, to form a regional committee of that African Socialist International, which will have representation in all the continents of the world where African people are being oppressed by imperialism, whether that's in Asia, Latin America, North America, which is Mexico, U.S., Canada, or the Caribbean, or elsewhere.
Nicole?
Well, as a member of AISO, my main objective is to spread the word to fellow African students for the purpose of curtailing this false national consciousness that seems to be in existence here in Canada. So my goal is to just increase numbers, as we are lacking in numbers in Canada, yeah, as opposed to United States. So,
and critique the ideas, right, that are coming out of the academy, even, because that's the position that we're in. We have access to that space to be able to critique the ideas that are being produced and producing the ideologies that allow us to continue exploiting.
For sure.
I have a question as well. African peoples have been on this continent for over 400 years now. A lot of the stolen resources of Africa have been transplanted to this soil, colonized soil, which is also the stolen resources and labor of the indigenous peoples of this land.
Mm-hmm.
But the labor and those stolen resources are now built up into this continent, and just as well with a lot of other stolen peoples or peoples who were forced to migrate under duress, the working class in Canada being as diverse as it is, what is the relationship according to the, I guess, the African People's Socialist Party? What's the relationship of African peoples to Canadian revolutionary cause, or maybe to be more precise, what's its relationship to the rest of the working class, whether it be South Asians, East Asians, Filipinos, or more European background working class workers?
From what I understand, as a revolutionary African internationalist party, what they're striving to do is not win the American working class revolution, or at this point to build alliances with the revolutionary working class in America or Canada, but they're concerned with the liberation of Africa. Mm-hmm. And definitely to have alliances under African working class leadership, but they're very much concerned with unifying Africans to regain control of the labor and resources of the continent. In terms of their domestic policies,
being a predominantly American
organization,
I'm not aware
of that.
I
can't comment on that. Mm-hmm. But I see them as really struggling to unify Africans. So they're struggling for the liberation of African people worldwide, and they're not waging national revolutionary struggles, to my understanding at this point. I know there are other African parties and movements doing more domestic work, but I see the work of the African mm-hmm. People's Socialist Party is building an international. And although I am one of those African revolutionaries struggling within the Canadian context, I'm very much interested in being a part of that effort to build African Socialist International, because I do feel that my role as an African revolutionary is to struggle in a multinational movement against Canadian imperialism, but I also see myself as being a part of that international initiative to liberate the continent
and
unify with Africans in North America.
That's a declaration right there, brother.
I wanted to add that I think it's also to address the fact that, even participating in different groups, different organizations in North America, I've always heard accounts of African people feeling that there are issues that are not really addressed by those movements, that are only really addressed by an organization such as this, which is focused on African peoples and the African continent itself. Do you know what I mean? And not only on liberating resources and regaining power, but on liberating people on the continent and in the diaspora from the struggle to like reproduce themselves, like to just to produce their life, to find food, clothing, and shelter. Do you know what I mean? Those basic necessities, which the disparity is huge. Do you know what I mean? In terms of like, you have people living on $2 a day in Asia, people living on $1 a day on the African continent, and it's mm-hmm. just to, address specifically for African people these issues that are, closer to home.
I guess a question that I have outstanding, and I think it would be most fair just to bring a member of the African People's Socialist Party onto our show, as
exactly,
we've done in the past.
Yeah.
We had Odion Osejefo a while back from the AISO, and I know he was involved in the movement as well. Back in September, we had him on the show, but we should probably do this again. It's an interesting debate. But one of the things I'm interested in to know is, what is the relationship of that struggle, which seems to me like an externally oriented struggle in terms of uniting African peoples on this continent, on Turtle Island, on North America. What is the relationship of that movement to the daily struggles of African peoples here? So whether it be the dispossession of housing, the struggle against police terrorism, whether it be, you know, the low wage, ghettoized, you know, occupational situations of African peoples, for a lot of African peoples on this continent, how does their struggle address those day-to-day struggles, which ultimately may be economic struggles, but they're also political struggles against the Canadian, you know, monopoly ruling class right here. Mm-hmm. Wasim, yep. You there?
Is that a question or is that a comment?
Kind of a bit of both. It's a bit of both. Like, how does their movement address the daily political and economic struggles of African peoples on the continent here?
On the North American continent.
Yeah.
I think you would have to look at the party's program. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Go through all those points, but we don't really have the time.
Yeah, we actually
got
to go to a commercial. That's why I said, to be fair, we should actually just, like, you know, we have to bring on one of their members and just, you know, debate this out and see what they have to say.
For a future show. But I wanted to thank you, Chris and Nicole, very much for your input. Is there anything else that you guys wanted to add?
No, but it was a great weekend, and we should definitely continue the debate.
Yeah,
most definitely. This was we were with Nicole from the African International Students Organization and Wasim from Black Action Defense Committee and Basics. Thank you two so much for being on the show today.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye, guys.
We got a little commercial. We'll be right back. Radio Basics, CHRY 105.5. Radio Basics, we're back. Who's in the studio still?
And the song. We're going to hear another song. Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, we're going to hear another song. Sorry, I took out my headphones. We're going to hear another song right now called I Must Speak Bilingual off the I. James Jones album Stitched in the Sweatshop. It's a throwback.
All right, let's do it.
Without further ado, the man with the picture-perfect eye here to shed a few lines. The undefeatable Wayne Solomon. Ladies and gentlemen.
I must speak bilingual. Neither one of them's mine. I must study all this century of history. None of it mine. I must read this and that, what is and what is not. But none of it speak to me. Not one of it speak of me. Am I entirely obscure? I see you talk and teach, but I really can't hear a word you say. I must speak bilingual. Neither one of them's mine. I must speak bilingual. Neither one of them's mine. I must speak bilingual. Neither one of them's mine. Neither one of them's mine.
Everybody, we're back. And now Corey and I. Corey, are you there?
I'm here.
I can see you. We're gonna be talking about the Arts and Culture Committee. The Arts, Culture and Social Committee, which is another part of Basics community organizing that we're trying to start up, and, you know, just go into some more detail about the whole idea behind it, why we think it's important. And, you know, so what is it, Corey? You came up with a draft of our sort of basis of unity.
Well, we came up with it collectively amongst the 4-5 people we have working on it, one person remotely from New York City now.
Makaya, what?
Makaya.
Yeah. And
shout outs.
Our listeners probably remember Makaya. So pretty much we want to have a group within Basics that specifically supports the creation of revolutionary forms of art linked to the social and political struggle of working people, and establishing contact with revolutionary minded artists, getting those of us who are creative and have a background in art and that kind of stuff to be engaged in the political work that we're doing. Mm-hmm. Do you want to add anything to that, Alex?
Yeah, well, I think that's pretty much what it is that we want to do, and we want to be able to network with artists within the city locally and also internationally on a broader scale, nationally and internationally on a broader scale to you know, make this whole process of this politicizing process that we're having, like the struggle that we're having with people, with people that we encounter every day, a little bit more personable, because I think it's a lot easier to relate to people on the basis of art than it is all on the basis of ideas, usually.
Art kind of wraps it up. It's a great vehicle.
It's beautiful.
It makes it brings out its beauty and its necessity.
It's almost less.
Go ahead.
It's just less like in your face, you know, like this is the idea, this is the line, this is it. It's like it can be encapsulated in a way that's sort of vague but still to the point, you know what I mean? It's up to a person's interpretation, and since it's not necessarily defined, it just makes it easier to engage in discussion and, you know, sort of take these theories out of these strict like didactic sort of forms and, you know, open them up, make it broader. And so in terms of art, we're talking what, theater,
dancing. Writing.
Graphic.
I know there's some graphic visual novelists out there. graphic novels and stuff were actually a really awesome way to do stuff, because people don't suspect they're going to be so political, right? Like, think of it, Persepolis, People's History of American Empire, the graphic novel version. Like, you can push it far. Same with fantasy writers. Think of Battlestar Galactica. You know, they were able to push the envelope politically in a really critical way. Because
that's a direct call out to our former graphic novelists in Basics, who are not quite active in Basics anymore, to come back and hook us up.
And to new graphic novelists out there who are doing amazing political work, telling people stories that are really relevant. So I myself am doing the dance. I've done some theater stuff and would love to have more theater and dance artists come work with us in Basics.
Our guest Nicole here sings.
Our guest Nicole is a singer. Are you going to drop something for us, Nicole?
Not today.
She's cursing me.
I know, she's cursing us both right now. But actually Basics is working with Chris, who was just interviewed, on putting together a play in Lawrence Heights around the development there. So that play is currently underway, being written and recruiting actors from high schools in the area. And there's a lot of different art-based projects that we have in mind. We just want to kind of get people together and start unifying our ideas, start talking amongst ourselves about the role that art can play in progressive struggle and build our community of artists in the city and even beyond, eventually, to stay united in these forms of work and be excited about working with each other.
Yeah.
Like, creating stuff together is... It feels so inspiring and intimate. And
it really is a great way to bond, you know. It's a great way to get to know people and just learn how to be more relaxed around people and learn how to just be in a community, like participate in a community, because you're producing something together, you know.
And just to put it into the context of broader struggle, which the Arts, Culture, and Social Committee of Basics, being part of Basics, believes that, you know, we're pushing the line that art should be is already a weapon of politics and struggle. It's just that most of the art that we see on a day-to-day basis reinforces the status quo. So it's about taking back art for the people. And just to let people know, the way Basics is structured is that we're broken down into different organizing groups and that correspond with our organization from different struggles, different geographical areas, different issues, or different types of work, and the Arts and Culture Committee being one of those groups that does more, it's more like a functional type of group that does its work based on arts and culture and stuff. But we have a lot of different organizing groups and Basics that people are welcome to get involved in, and you can contact us and you know, let us know what you're interested in doing if you're interested in the media work at Basics, and especially in the community organizing sector of Basics work, because Basics is like any other media, it's propaganda, but it's propaganda for the people. It's stuff that communicates our stories and our perspectives.
And our ideas and our art.
And artists, we know that you are out there and listening, and we want to hear from you. So you can email us at... What email should we give out?
Radiobasics@gmail.com.
Radiobasics@gmail.com. Interested artists, hit us up.
Or you can hit us up at our central email, which is basics.canada@gmail.com. Whatever one.
Yeah.
And also check out our website, which is always coming up with new content, you know, basicsnewsletter.blogspot.com.
All right. We're going to...
Yeah, we were just listening to NECA in the background, the song called Warrior.
The song?
That's it. And the song that we're going to be hearing now is one by Wasson, who just was, we were speaking to about the conference in Washington. And the song is called Hate.
Let's do it up. Wasson, Hate, it's off the Underground Railroad mixtape.
Which Volume 1.
We understand there's a second one coming out.
Yeah, Volume
2
is coming out on Friday. There's going to be a launch in the Van Oakwood area.
Yo, people, check it out. Piazzas.
So please check it out.
Exactly. Piazzas. What time does it start? Arts and Culture Committee.
I don't want to be mistaken.
More or less.
I get it wrong. But can I just make an announcement before we leave? There's going to be an event on this Friday the 29th as well, but in the evening time. And it's about what's going on in the Congo. So there's going to be 3 speakers speaking at Sydney Smith in room 1087 at 7 o'clock. And it's at 100 St. George Street, and there's a $5 suggested donation. So if you would like to come out. And
who's organizing that?
That is being organized by QP3907.
That's really important.
Yeah.
Because Canada gets a lot of its minerals. It steals a lot of its minerals from the Congo.
So they're going to be talking about, you know, how over 5 million Congolese have died as a result of the war. Over 250,000 women are raped as part of the strategies of the war, and how they've been plundering the gold, diamonds, coltan, which goes into cell phones and computers. That without that resource, they wouldn't work. And then the cobalt and the copper and the timber and uranium and all those other
And then, sources. After that, you should come to the jam that Basics is helping organize at Vaughan and Oakwood Piazzas. Let's just say 9 o'clock after that event is done.
Yeah.
It's going to be the launch of the second Underground Railroad mixtape. This is the track off the first Hate by Wasson. We're out.
Enjoy it. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Peace.
I'm with Nicole, Corey, Alex, Steve, Radio Basics, CHRY 105.5. We out. Till next week.
Stay safe. Wrap it right. da, 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 da.